7 now. You're listening to West Kent Today on West Kent Radio. And now I'm going to say hello to Phil.
Hello, John. How are you?
I'm fair to middling. And fair to middling is pretty good because it's either fair to suicidal or fair to homicidal on the other side. So fair to middling is pretty good.
Fair to middling is pretty impressive. I'm glad I'm sitting over this side of the desk, Dave. Yeah.
Now, the wine comes there in the middle.
Perfect.
So we're all set for this morning.
I'll have one of those after I've done my first little bit.
Okay. Yeah. Now, a sensitive subject, but we're going to tackle it this morning, is end-of-life care. What are you going to tell us about that this morning?
Yeah. So end-of-life care is a very important subject, and as we've been talking about off-air, it's one that does need to be discussed. It's not everyone's sort of mid-morning conversation. But what we want to try and find out and work alongside those that are kind of planning and commissioning services is to find out your experiences of relatives, family members, friends and the care they received towards the end of their life. In COVID from sort of March 2020 onwards, I can't believe I'm saying that's 3 years ago, but from March 2020, obviously a lot of what they call enhanced care plans were put in place for people who were of senior years, and they wanted to make sure that everything was in place just to kind of, you know, make things as easy for the family, but also for the actual individual, so they weren't suffering unnecessarily during that sort of COVID period. And essentially, there's now an overview happening of end-of-life services that's liaising with both family and the patients themselves. And we would, and I know it's a sensitive subject, and I know it's a very difficult one, maybe a very difficult one to talk about, but we want your experiences of that, because we want your experiences to help shape services going forwards. So you can do that by obviously contacting Health Watch directly, and I'll give the contact details as I will do normally at the end. But please do get in touch with us. How were services, you know, designed for you, for yourself? How did it work with your family member? Were you treated with respect? All those sort of experiences. We want to hear about it, because they're both good and bad. Because as I said earlier on, we want that to help shape services moving forwards.
Yeah, and it can happen very suddenly, can't it, at the end of life?
Absolutely, yeah.
And there's three main issues, either in hospital,
yeah,
hospice,
yeah,
or at home.
Absolutely.
And all three you'd like to hear about.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, particularly with ones where people have made that choice to actually be treated at home.
Yeah.
You know, were your wishes respected? If they weren't able to be respected, was it made sort of clear to you why they couldn't potentially actually support you in what you requested for your family member or your loved one from home? Again, as much information, and I know, again, I can't stress enough, we know it's a difficult subject to talk about, but this is where you can have a direct influence on services moving forward, because with your experiences and you telling us about it, we can then take that to the people making those decisions and commissioning those services and say, look, this is what's happened here. And again, this is an overview of the whole of Kent, not just the West Kent radio area. This is the whole of Kent. So what might have happened to you in the Frant area might have happened in the Folkestone area to one person, or the Faversham area to somewhere else. We will put everything specifically together to make sure that overall services, you know, we can go back to the people that are designing those services and go, this is what our experiences from our people are.
Yeah. Well, I'll quote from personal experience that summer of 2020, my wife went down very suddenly, and we had the help from the hospice to stay at home, getting support and everything that we needed in place. Mm-hmm. The first day of support, carers coming in, we just rushed to hospital that evening because her blood count was extremely low.
Yeah.
Couldn't get in to see her until the Sunday afternoon in hospital. So there were several days we just didn't know what was happening.
And is that because they weren't responding to you at the time, or is that because there were restrictions in place?
It's COVID restrictions.
COVID restrictions were in place.
And she was in intensive care, but previously in intensive care before that, you could actually go and sit alongside. So it was my daughter, being a community nurse, managed to get hold of the doctor to find out what was going on.
Right.
But every time I rang saying, well, she's comfortable, And that morning, the doctor rang for an ambulance at 8 o'clock on Wednesday evening. It arrived at 12:30 in the morning.
Right, okay.
And my son was coming back from America that Thursday morning. He'd come to see his mum. And it wasn't until Sunday afternoon we could get in to see her.
Right.
And because he was supposed to be in quarantine coming back from the States, we didn't know what to do. And I said, just don't say anything. Don't say anything. Let's go in. We've been told we can go in at 4 o'clock. And we got in there, and the doctor came in, and he said, ah, he says, you've just flown in from America, haven't you? Good to see you. That was a relief. And in 2 days she died, but she was surrounded by family.
Which is, you know, it's exactly the right thing for her and the right thing for you. And
she wanted to be at home, but there was no way she could be at home. They couldn't get her to the hospice because she wouldn't be able to travel.
Yeah.
But it was quick, within a week.
It's the times that we had, you know, the last 3 years, particularly the first two, so from March 2020 onwards, this is something that I think the National Health Service has never, ever had to deal with before.
Yeah.
And I think that every single, and this is from personal, personal opinion here, so outside of Health Watch, if I may be honest enough, because you've been honest enough to say that, so let me be honest and say this. And the fact is that I think that hospitals will say they didn't really know how to handle it properly in that time. They had to handle it for the most effective healthcare, but maybe that didn't necessarily lead to the most people-based relationship service at the time. And I think this is what's leading to where they are now, is that we you know, we've moved on a little bit since then. You know, people are still falling ill with COVID, but not to the level that they were back then, because obviously things have moved on medically. But in terms of services and in terms of working with individual families and patients themselves, actually the right thing to do is to find out what it is exactly what everybody wants in terms of the family, and then seeing if that can be delivered, because there's nothing, it's a bit pointless making false promises to people if you can say, yeah, we'll do everything you want, and then it doesn't happen. So there's about having this open and honest discussion like we are now to actually make it as much as they can to make that, essentially, which is a, you know, a very stressful time, as smooth as possible.
Yes.
So yeah. So should we have a bit of music?
We'll have a bit of music. I'll come back to the downside.
Okay.
After this, we're not going to have music. Actually, we're going to hear Nicky. Simply Red for your babies. Now with me is Phil Thorne from Health Watch Kent. We were talking about end of life care, and I was telling my story and got a little bit emotional, but not to worry. But it was the afterwards that was a bit more traumatic, because on the day my wife went into hospital, all the equipment that had been ordered turned up.
So this was all the equipment that was going to kind of help her at home?
Yeah, moving around, standing up.
Right, okay.
Things like that, and the first day of care we'd had. And so it was in the flat for a fortnight before it was collected again. So I was being constantly reminded and tripping over things.
And was there a process there where you went, you know, once it happened, and obviously you were dealing with the sort of the initial grief, or the first wave of grief, that actually you contacted them, or someone contacted them and said, can you please come and take this equipment?
Oh, I rang them and said, they no longer need it. But they said, we can't do it until a certain date.
Right. Okay.
And, you know, I wasn't in the mood to say.
Is that something, I mean, can you, if you can sort of recall back, did they give a reason why it took that long?
No.
No. Okay. So, I mean, that's certainly a bit of feedback that we can take back, because, again, you know, you aren't going to be alone in that situation where, you know, things, as you said quite right at the start of this, things do happen quickly and move quickly. But then to, you've got that, as you said, 2 weeks with the equipment at the flat.
Yeah.
To deal with that, as well as everything else that you're dealing with at the time.
Yeah. Registering the death wasn't a problem, because the hospital notified the registrar, and we did it all over the phone very, very quickly, very, very, I would say, professionally and caring from both the registrar and the hospital.
And that was a different process that they put in place during the lockdown period, because previously you had to have certificates and they were kind of coming from GPs, etc.
Well, yeah, collection from the hospital and then take it into the library to register death, but it was all done electronically,
okay,
which was great. But then the day after she died, the blue badge turned up.
Now, how long beforehand had this actually been applied for?
2 weeks.
So it was a 2-week delay in terms of getting the blue badge through, which actually, believe it or not, I think at the moment they would say 2 weeks is a phenomenally short wait to get blue badge applications. And we come in and move on to that subject, if you like.
Yeah, let's do that, because it is a sensitive subject.
It is a sensitive subject as well, not only for people who are getting blue badges for the first time and what they are allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do with them, but also your experiences of actually applying for them and the delays involved. So I was part of a listening group for patients living with long-term conditions over in West Kent back in about October, November last year. And one of the big things that came out of that was blue badge renewals. So you can only renew your blue badge within a certain amount of time. But what was happening with the delays at the administrative end is that blue badges weren't coming through, new blue badges weren't coming through until maybe 2, maybe 3 months after the expiry of the previous one. But you weren't allowed to apply for it earlier to negate this date. So there were lots of periods where people were either using out-of-date blue badges and hopefully they weren't getting picked up, or that... and this was the rather distressing thing we were getting from some, that they were, it was actually affecting their life. So, for example, blue badge users going shopping in supermarkets. Lots of people were giving the feedback that actually they weren't able to go because people were, as people do, and there's no reasoning behind it, you know, parking in blue badge spaces without blue badges, and there was no enforcement. Or that they didn't want to risk going into the supermarket without having an up-to-date blue badge, just using their old one. Or, and this was the, that they were, it's actually affecting their life to the point that they were going shopping at 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning, because that was the only thing they could guarantee getting a blue badge space in a supermarket car park. And it's little things like that, things that actually restrict the freedom. The whole purpose of blue badge is to give people the freedom to be able to go about their lives as normal without having to park miles away. Or, you know, literally you have that ability to do that. And the fact is that that was being restricted. People's movement was being restricted. It had an effect on their mental health as well. So we're always looking for feedback about how long these are taking and what mitigating circumstances did the people issuing these badges actually give you for the delays, apart from sheer volume of work and due to COVID, that kind of thing. Because these are long-term effects that they're having on people. So again, please, if you've had any experiences of that, please do get in touch with Health Watch.
Yeah, who issues the blue badges?
I think it's a local authority that's actually issued through the blue badges.
Because I seem to recall having something from Kent County Council.
Yeah, local authority, so KCC is a general...
So it's not local borough councils?
No, sorry, it's my mistake. Local borough councils, no, it's all done through KCC. And indeed, so they are, you know, they've got a huge number to do, but that still doesn't kind of explain 3-month waits after expiry dates, particularly when they're enforcing that you can only renew it maybe 3 weeks before it actually expires, to then have another sort of like 6 or 7, maybe 8 weeks after the expiry date before your new blue badge comes through.
I think I'll put a note on it saying applied for in the car.
Yeah, and then that depends on the warden.
It does indeed.
That's a particular area as to whether they'll take it seriously or not. And again, that that warden then comes from that particular local authority. So, because obviously the wardens are then, you know, they're assigned by the local authority to deal with that. So there's again this kind of like what's done by KCC and what's done by the local authority. And so, yeah, it is, there are stresses involved, because if you do something like that and you still get a ticket from a warden, you've got the stresses on you of having to phone the local authority and go, look, I've applied for this. This has been delayed. I can give you this proof. You've still got to deal with that.
Yeah.
So if you have any experiences of that as well, delays with blue badges, we really, really want to hear about that as well. Alternatively, we want to hear if it worked smoothly for you.
Yes.
Because we would then probably maybe ask you some different questions as to what, how did you do it? Did you, you know, where did you send it? How did that work? There's got to be some reasons why, you know, in some, because if it's Kent County Council doing it all together, how can one part of Kent be quicker than another? But it should be the same.
They've probably got one poor girl left school doing it all.
I think they might have a bit more to it than that, given the volume of it. They can't just have one.
Well,
certainly, I think that, you know, the it's so vital that we hear, you know, things like that, because we can, you know, it's not just, although we're Health Watch Kent, we work within the social care sector as well. So it is about letting the county wide and the local authorities know this is what we're hearing right across the board, because it still has a health based effect, because it affects mental health, their stresses. You know, people who are living with long term conditions have mental health issues quite regularly too, because they're having to deal with everything associated with their long term condition.
Yeah. Well, we'll be back in a couple of minutes. We'll move on to another subject.
We will.
Shakespeare's Mistress is coming to the Amelia.
Believe in me, Richard Marx. You're listening to West Kent Today on 95.5, 106.7 FM, online, on your smart speaker. With me is Phil Thorne from Health Watch Kent, and we're now going to talk about hospital discharges. Now, that's getting out of hospital. It's not all the sewage leaks.
Absolutely, yes.
I'll throw that one in.
Yeah, thank you for that. So hospital discharge. So, again, before we had our little first conversation this morning, I did say to John, I said, look, I'm going to talk about something now, which I can put myself in the same age bracket as John for. And that is, up until probably maybe 10 years ago, if you were in hospital and you were hoping to get discharged on a Friday afternoon, and if you didn't get discharged on a Friday afternoon, you weren't going home until Monday, because there were no consultants, doctors around to authorise a discharge at a weekend. So literally, if you weren't going home on a Friday afternoon, you weren't going back home until Monday. And that has changed in more recent times. But what we're obviously hearing as well is that things aren't quite as good as they should be with regards to the discharge. This seems to be the case at weekends as well. So, for example, people who've been in hospital either for short term, they're of an age where they're in their own home, and unfortunately they have incidents which takes them into hospital. You would have like a discharge package, you know, right accommodation maybe arranged, just talk about what the next steps are. That necessarily hasn't been done fully and comprehensively prior to discharge, because the hospitals need the bed. We're always hearing about the phrases bed blocking and such like, and so the hospitals they try and arrange as quickly as possible for patients if they feel they're well enough to go home, or to go into some kind of other accommodation that will help them in their recovery. But that doesn't always work. And so, again, we would like to hear from you as an individual, if this is affects you, or if this has affected your family member or friend, then we would love to hear from you, simply because there are major projects being done about the discharge process right across Kent, because it seems to be inconsistent in different hospitals, inconsistent within the same hospital at times, depending on the days of the week. And right across Kent, there is some inconsistency. There is no... It depends on the circumstances, the level of staffing available at the time, the level of planning, potentially the condition, the ability to actually organise external accommodation if people aren't fit enough to go back to their own homes. There is a delay in that process. People are being discharged without necessarily the right medication. If you're discharged later on in the evening, maybe you may not be able to get the medication to go home with because the pharmacy may have closed. So then you or your relative may be tasked with going to the local on-call pharmacy and getting the medication from there with the prescription. That they potentially could give that as your responsibility as well. That happens in some parts of Kent. So your experiences of discharge from hospital, we really want to hear about them because we know they're not perfect, and we've been tasked to actually see how much experience we can get from start to finish of the discharge process. So from the moment you're told you're going home, how long is that process? Was it explained to you how it's going to work? You know, were you explained about the package that you was being put in for you, if there was one? Were you explained about medications? Were they able to do that for you? How long was the actual wait from being told that you were being discharged to you actually going home? You know, there are, and I have to say, I don't know this for Pembury Hospital, but where I live, down in Ashford, there is a discharge lounge. Yeah. So as soon as they say that you're fit to go, whilst they're getting everything else in place, they take you down to the discharge lounge, and you're there until such time as everything is all wrapped up in terms of got your medication sorted out, everything until you're, if you're having hospital transport, you're waiting there. And it could be a few hours. Mm-hmm. It could be as little as half an hour if they're waiting to get things sorted out. If that exists in Pembury Hospital, how long have you waited there? Have you waited there for a long period of time? Did staff keep in contact with you whilst you were there? Were there staff checking that you were okay while you were there, or were you just literally left there waiting until you were due to be collected? We want to hear people's experiences because we want to be able to go, again, it all comes down to this with Health Watch. We want to go back to the people who actually design these services and go, this isn't working. This is what we're hearing. These are the experiences we're hearing. And then we go from there.
Yeah. One instance I can think of is that there was a lady taken into Maidstone Hospital from this area. She was slightly confused. She had a urinary infection. Okay. More confused.
Yeah, they can have really sort of... It's quite distressing for family members as well to witness a relative that's got a UTI.
I don't think there were any local family members, but there was a friend who lived in the area who popped in and looked after her from time to time. She was discharged to a residential home.
Right.
The other side of Maidstone. So the friend who had no transport couldn't get across to see her.
Yeah.
And so there was frustration on one side, and the lady who was actually in the care home, no idea why she was there or whatever to begin with. That's quite a distressing experience. If you're there on your own, you've not got anybody you know visiting you.
Yeah, absolutely. It is quite a distressing experience. And just to say to that point where if that infection is still the case where it was still having that confusing effect, you do have to question whether or not they were right to be discharged in the first place.
I can't be absolutely clear and say that she still had an infection when she was discharged. She may have been confused before she got in there, but it got worse.
Right, okay.
But, you know, the thing was being sent to somewhere where completely out of the area where she lived and knew people.
Mm.
So that caused a bit of distress for those who used to know her.
Yeah, and was the communication there from the hospital to that friend to say, this is where we're actually sending her?
I don't know. I think that's ring up and find out.
Mm. Yeah, see, to me, that's if the person who is when you go in, the next of kin or the person who's the contact, who's told, right, you know, your relative or your family member or your friend is being discharged, this is where they're going. There should be some communication as to what's happening.
There should be, but GDPR comes into it, and unless you're on a piece of paper, you can't be told anything.
And that's the thing. If once they were going into hospital, they would have a point of contact for a family member.
Yeah.
So if they had done that, then that's obviously the person who is then given the details of where they're going. So there does seem to be a major communication issue there.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, we're going to come back in a few minutes. And
yeah, I've got some stuff to say.
You've got some stuff to say. Well, in that case, I'm going to just get my computer going. I'm going to play... Come on, where are you? There we go. Now, hospital discharge, you've got more to say.
So what we want to try and do is again, with everything we've spoken about today, really, is that if you want to have your say, it's kind of how you do it. And I can sit here and give you the phone numbers and the email addresses and send you in the direction of the website. But I want to kind of explain a bit more about the experience that you get if you do get to us. So if you decide to give us a call, or indeed drop us an email, we'll contact you. So you let us, so if you want to phone up and have a chat about it, then that's fine. We've got these team of people that will talk to you about it, and we'll log your experiences. And if you phone Health Watch up and say, they'll ask you where you heard about us. Well, obviously you say West Kent Radio.
Definitely.
You absolutely say West Kent Radio. If there's more to your story, if you feel that it's just, there's a whole experience attached to it, so it could just be that, you know, you could just be, oh yeah, when I was discharged it took me a while. But if there's a whole more, I'd only use the phrase deep-seated because it seems too dramatic, but if there are more issues going on with it, then one of our team, and it could well be me, it could be one of my colleagues, will actually give you a call back at a time that suits you during the day, to actually go, okay, let's chat about this. Where can we support you? Where can we point you in the direction of to actually, you know, get further help? For example, if you were to phone and tell us that, you know, you've recently lost a family member in the West Kent area, services are, you know, things are a bit, we could signpost you in the right way. If you perchance want to make a complaint, we can tell you how to do that, or we can signpost you in the right way to do that. If you're not comfortable doing that yourself, there is a free NHS advocacy service, and we can signpost you in their direction. But it's the moving forward bit for you. How can you move forward and how you can get support? And so what I would say is, if you phoned me, and I would point you in the direction of a group called Friends Together. And the reason I'm aware of Friends Together is you, John, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So you give me your explanation of, I know that I'm turning this around, so it's like me interviewing you now.
Yeah.
Right. Tell me a little bit about Friends Together.
Friends Together is a bereavement service set up by a funeral director in Tunbridge Abbey Funerals.
Yeah.
Because they were getting people coming into their office just to chat.
Yeah.
After somebody died and they'd had a funeral. And loneliness was a real problem. And so they decided to set up this organisation called Friends Together, which now meets in several venues,
yeah.
Different groups, Pembury, Tunbridge Wells, Tunbridge, two groups in Tunbridge, a third one starting soon.
Mm, Paddock Wood as well.
Paddock Wood, Hadlow.
Yeah.
And each group operates a little bit differently, but some will have provided lunch.
Yeah.
Others it's tea and coffee, and you have a chat. And you're with people going through a similar experience. But they're very jolly meetings.
Mm.
It sounds strange. You're all bereaved.
Yeah.
You've been through the same experience. Sometimes something hits you, and there are people there who understand.
Yeah.
There's an evening one which meets tomorrow night in the Rose and Crown in Tunbridge.
Yeah.
It's slightly different. It's a smaller group.
Right.
But we've got into some sort of serious issues that people are going through.
Right.
Whether it's being trying to get probate sorted, and you've got people chasing you for money and whatever. I'm not telling tales out of school, but there's one lady who... her husband died and her father died, and she had to sort out both. And she was getting hounded.
Getting support for something like that as well. It's great to have that little sort of like community yeah. group that you've got.
And she was a volunteer for another charity as well, but
yeah.
she was going through hell. And we got things sorted out, things that she could do, because there was enough experience to say, right, let's get hold of so-and-so.
Yeah.
Or put it in the hands of solicitors.
But the title of the group that you're with there is the perfect group, because you're friends
yeah,
together.
Friends together, yeah.
Supporting
it. We're all going through. Yeah, so...
If you are listening to this now on West Kent Radio and you're part of the Friends Together group in Pembury, then I'll be seeing you for tea and coffee in about 3 hours, because I'm joining you there this afternoon for a chat about Health Watch and potentially some of the subjects we've spoken about today. And if you're part of the group in Paddock Wood, then I will see you Thursday morning, because I'm coming to join you on Thursday morning for a similar chat as well. But the point I was trying to make with regards to the experience is, if you know, you might be sitting there listening to this morning, and whether you're out driving in your car listening on the radio, or whether you're in an office or in a shop or maybe one of the sort of numerous charity shops in the area that have got West Kent Radio playing through, or you're listening at home, or you're even part of the team here, like John, and you're in this area. Your voice counts.
Yes.
Your voice matters. We want to hear your experiences, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. We want to hear your experiences. We do not pass on any contact details for you as an individual. And that is the thing we have to stress, is that, you know, if you contact Health Watch, we'll listen to you, we'll signpost you the right way to get help potentially, and we'll move forward, and we will let those decision makers know what's going on, but we will anonymize it. If they then come back to us and say your particular story is unique, and they say, that's not, can we talk to the person about that? We will come back to you and go, right, we've reached out to them, they want to talk to you, and we'll introduce you, so there is some kind of discussion process. But rest assured, when you tell us, it's anonymous. So it's absolutely anonymous. Shall I give out some contact details?
You're out some contact details.
You're looking at me like, Phil, you've got to stop.
You've got 1 minute 40 seconds.
Right, okay. So, phone number for Healthwatch Kent is 0808 801 0102. That's 0808 801 0102. You can email info@healthwatchkent.co.uk. Our website, www.healthwatchkent.co.uk. Or just Google Healthwatch Kent. If you're out and about driving this morning and you haven't got the capabilities of writing that down, just remember Healthwatch Kent and Google it, and all the details are there. Now, this is my last live appearance on a Monday for a while, because I'm moving over to the Medway area to do some work over there. But what I would stress is, John, thank you, and Dave, thank you for talking to me last month, because we really, really want to talk to as many people as we can in the West Kent radio area. And you giving us this opportunity to talk about what we're doing is something that other community groups in the West Kent radio area should be doing. You should be contacting West Kent Radio, regardless of whether you're a small charity that's raising money for individual projects or larger projects. You need to contact West Kent Radio to get your message out there.
Yeah, visit our website, westkentradio.co.uk. We're actually advertising for more volunteers at the moment and all sorts of things, news presenters.
So if you want to make a difference yourself, get involved.
Definitely. And it's great fun. We all get the same amount of pay.
Yeah, excellent.
Zilch.
Right.
So there's no strikes.
You're doing it for love.
Exactly.
And being able to make that difference.
Well, thank you very much, Phil. And I'm sure we'll be in contact and get something sorted out in the future.
Absolutely.
So you're listening to West Kent Radio, West Kent Today, 95.5, 106.7 FM, online on your smart radio. And to take us to